I'm the Reverend Julie Taylor, the Senior Director of Contextual Ministry at Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago. It's in that role that I have the opportunity to work with dozens of congregations and seminarians each year as they engage internships. While this is for sure a challenging time, for many it's an exciting time as well. The response and ongoing changes that come from experiencing a worldwide pandemic have shifted congregations into a new normal. And with that as a backdrop, current seminarians expect to accompany congregations through change. They expect that as part of their job description. They also recognize that faith leaders, both now and the faith leaders of the future, need more tools to help engage conflict, more tools to support communities in grieving the losses that have happened and that will continue to happen, and more tools for communication, communication across mediums, communication across generations, and communication tools to reach constituencies both in and outside of a congregation. Whether they're considering intentional interim ministry as a vocation or not, seminarians recognize that those tools will be invaluable as they begin their careers. So I ask my students who are considering parish ministry why, what's calling them to the parish right now? Overwhelmingly, they believe that congregations can be places of healing, growth, and transformation, a religious home base from which to launch, to springboard, expand outward, and engage a world that's also in transition and change. And when I ask students about why they're answering their call now, in a time such as this, well, the responses were, I don't know, not anything that you'd probably be surprising, but one particular student, I think, encapsulated themes that came from most of them. I'm going to quote them. They said, "I couldn't not go to seminary. It was a calling that had sat within me for many years. I suppose the incubator of the pandemic made me, like so many others, take stock of my life and actualize this calling. It comes from a deep need to be of service to humanity and the wider world." Amen to that.
Greetings, colleagues. I'm the Reverend Dr. Jennifer Kupona Kwong, Ministerial Credentialing Director for our Unitarian Universalist Association. I wanted to go over some figures with you. The first is, how many are going through the formation process right now? How many aspirants and candidates do we have? When I first got this position about 3 years ago, we had about 320, and that number had remained steady for a number of years. And recently, as in this year, we actually have an uptick, a small uptick, to about 340 or so aspirants and candidates going through the credentialing process. And out of that, the good news is that we have close to 20% who identify as Black, Indigenous, people of color, or BIPOC, or the other way to frame it is members of the global majority. And a significant number these days have also identified as trans and non-binary. The good news is we began asking people for this information when they fill out the initial inquiry form so that we could better track their progress and how they're doing, and also to keep in alignment with the recommendations from the Commission on Institutional Change to continue to support those who have been historically marginalized. Now, the other question is, which seminaries do they go to? We have at least one UU seminarian in 53 seminaries around the US and Canada, and probably even beyond. And out of that, two are, of course, our UU identity schools, Star King and Meadville Lombard. And again, believe it or not, we have a couple of seminarians who go to seminaries like Liberty University, which makes it perhaps a little bit more difficult to translate our UU values and theology in those settings. And associated with seminaries are the costs of going through and getting an MDiv degree. That has risen over the years. So last year, the average seminary debt was $65,000. And this year, it's now $75,000. So we're working not only with the Office of Church Staff Finance in terms of the debt reduction piece, but also trying to figure out how we could increase the number of scholarships we give to people. So kudos to the stewardship and development staff group of the UUA, as well as the leadership of the Reverend Dr. Susan Frederick Gray, who has helped find funding for us to distribute to our UU identity schools and also as part of our scholarship program over the years. And the other question you all may have is, out of these ministers, how many are planning on going to the parish ministry and how many are planning on doing community type of ministries? And the answer is a bit more complicated. I have more anecdotal stories to share with you rather than concrete ones. But there was this one MSC interview, for example, where only 4 out of the 16 that we interviewed were leaning more towards congregational ministry. So clearly there is a trend here, more so into chaplaincy or other types of innovative ministries rather than necessarily congregational ministries, which means that our internship sites, because these days, if you will recall, we allow for CPE residencies to count as internships. Many of our congregations are actually having difficulty finding interns. You may have seen the post recently on the UUMA page around ministers who are having difficulty filling, in some cases, even plum internship sites with decent salaries and also a great mentoring and an internship supervisor. So we've noticed trends in that regard. And also my colleague, the Reverend Keith Cron, could perhaps talk more about how that's been impacting settlement and the settlement process as well. And finally, I want to talk a little bit more about preparedness for ministry. So obviously the pandemic has put a pause on some people's internships and CPEs and being able to find those. So we actually had a record low of 36 people that we saw during the fiscal year of 2022, meaning from 2021 to 2022, there were only 36 people who saw the MSC for the entire year. Now, bear in mind, just a few years ago, as in 2018, we had 87. That was a record high of number of people who saw the MSC. And out of that, we used to be able to tell people that between 80 to 90% are affirmed in fellowship. But these days, that number has dropped to about 70%. While the number of people who are required for a return visit used to be the category 3s, that has now increased to between 20 to 25%. So we have noticed that trend going on the past few years as well. While the folks who are discontinued in candidacy has actually remained stable and steady, anywhere from a couple of years we had 0 to about 2 or 6%. So it's been hovering around 6% the past couple of years. Actually, I should take that back. It hasn't remained steady. So the past couple of years, that number has also increased. Calls into question, how is the formation process coming along? And more recently, I must say, kudos to the MFN and the UUMA for developing a more robust process of making sure that our folks have a vocational advisor and a discernment partner as they are going through this process. So lots to work on. I could give you a lot more figures. Feel free to call me or contact me in my office if you have any questions. It's jquang@uua.org.
Greetings from the Ministerial Formation Network Program Manager. That's me, Michelle Fabro. I appreciate Jennifer's kudos to the UUMA and the Ministerial Formation Network for our work developing collegial relationships and supporting discernment partnerships between aspirants and candidates and the UUMA members and fellowship. Since I joined the UUMA staff last July, I've had a front row seat to observe the trends that follow from the shifting demographic information that we just heard about. What I notice most now, and what I'm most excited by, is the life grounding of our incoming clergy colleagues. Getting to know folks in retreat settings and many one-on-one conversations this past year, it's clear that aspirants and candidates are committing their lives to vocations that the world needs. Vocations that are called from their communities and lived experiences where spiritual and religious care mattered to them. Chaplaincy in hospitals is certainly of heightened interest, but entrepreneurial and innovative ministries, movement chaplaincy and spiritual direction, models of coaching, consulting, even private practice and fee-for-service ministry are more often the career paths that students are imagining in their early formation. I'd say this is all a shift from the not so distant past when lay leadership experience in congregational life was most often the forming ground for newer colleagues. Callings out of crisis and justice community work in turn impacts internship placements and goals and learning needs that might not fit the mold of even a few years ago. I'd also note that folks preparing for ministry start out intending at least a 4 to 6 year pass, sometimes longer. We hear frequently of more complex work-life arrangements than traditional formation experiences from folks formed in past generations. Tolerance for moving multiple times in seminary or reliance on student loans to finance life are pretty much off the table now. With the shift to primarily online theological school programming, the nature of peer support, emotional, social, contextual skill development is in flux and across the formation landscape. It's rare to have those deep talks about eschatology over cups of tea after class. Perhaps this relates to what we observe of the increased needs and interests in retreats, chapter life, and gives us some focus to the intentional ways that the UUMA can and strives to nurture collegial relationships in formal and informal ways. All of this is to say that in a time of rapid change on the landscape of religious leadership, folks coming into UU ministry today have different skills and express a need for different skills, specifically more somatic and trauma-informed spiritual care. Folks are also asked for mentorship related to UU identity as it's expressed in interfaith settings. Sometimes mentors who were formed in past generations, and by past I mean 2019, are called upon for bridging what it means to share wisdom across generations, bridging what successful teaching or mentorship looks like in the messy middle. It might not be a trend, but it is a significant reality, which is to say, a past way of thinking about how every minister should know or everyone needs to be able to might be shifting in ways that make us all a bit uncomfortable or means we're all called upon to practice the art of discernment and growth as we tend to formation together.
Hello, I'm Patrice Curtis, Transform Interim Ministries Director at the UUA. I want to share a few words about interim ministry and our movement's call to widen the circle of concern. In my position at the UUA, I collaborate with and support transitions ministers in amplifying diversity, equity, and inclusion within congregations and disrupting unhealthy patterns that make beloved community difficult to realize. Interims face a few challenges by the nature of the relatively short time they serve a congregation. However, there are interims who are engaged in this culture change of creating radical belonging. Here are a few highlights. First, at the institutional level, the vast number of new interims each year commit to UUA interim training. In the last 3 years, that training has grown in its focus on anti-racism and anti-oppression. The training now includes a week-long visit to Montgomery, Alabama, to explore both historic civil rights and the contemporary ways in which those with marginalized identities are being threatened with harm through state legislation and laws. It also includes ongoing discussion throughout the year of focusing on identifying DEI wisdom, tools, and techniques. Second, the UUMA Transitions Ministers Chapter has a DEI team of several chapter members whom I have the privilege to serve alongside. This year, they will continue their work of the last few years. The team will explore further changes needed to create a chapter that feels inclusive to all ministers, encourage sharing of best practices between chapter members to move congregations further along the path toward beloved community, and will provide small group ministry that supports the personal growth of interim ministers around multiculturalism, anti-oppression, anti-racism, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Although we do not have hard historical numbers, it could be our faith has the largest number of Black, Indigenous, and people of color ministers who are serving as interims. Interims are also affecting change at the congregational level. They are encouraging congregations to hang LGBTQ+ and Black Lives Matter banners for the first time ever, transforming gendered bathrooms into all-gender bathrooms, guiding the passage of the eighth principle. These are a few examples. I hope this has given you an idea of the vibrancy of interim ministry serving the call for a diverse, equitable, inclusive, multicultural, Unitarian Universalism. Thank you.
I'm Reverend Keith Cron, Director of the Transitions Office, here to talk to you about the state of ministerial transitions. One of the most common questions I'm asked is, are people leaving ministry? And the answer is yes. The number of retirements is up. They're up about 20 from about 10 years ago per year. But also up are the number of people who are just leaving parish ministry to do another kind of ministry. We've seen that uptick. And we've also seen fewer new ministers going into parish ministry, which has led to the imbalance. And in fact, the latter two seem to have affected our both interim and settled searches more than the number of retirements. This, of course, has all been affected by the pandemic. It has accelerated ministers thinking about what they want to do with their lives and making other options. The interesting side note about that is when I talk to congregational leaders about their minister leaving, most every one of them said, that's interesting because I've been thinking about making changes in my life too. Clearly, this is pandemic related. What's also interesting is the number of settled congregations hasn't varied widely in the last 10 years. They pretty much stayed the same in terms of the number. If anything, they're down a little bit. We have seen a rise in part-time congregations. And the number of ministers has steadily gone down. When I started in the position in 2010, there were 130 ministers in search. That's declined from 110 to 90 to 70 to the last 2 years, about 55 to 60 ministers in search for settled congregations. Some of that is around economics. Some of it is around how complicated it is. We're going to begin recommending next year that no congregation under 25 members do a settled or interim search, but instead go directly to a contract search. This is in large part so they can save money. Settled search is expensive, and because of the leadership drain on congregations. Taking seven people out of a smaller congregation's leadership for a year is very, very hard. We also see there's just less interest in congregations under 125 than there used to be. There has been some slight movement toward congregations moving more toward sharing ministers, though the realities of that are complicated. And we'll see how that continues. I continue to think we'll have a day when we'll see congregations sharing a minister and sharing services, where one minister is preaching in one congregation and streamed into another or several other congregations every morning at 11:20 or whatever time it might be for worship. Ministers are offered asking, I'd love to do something virtually. What's true for our congregations is they are less enamored with that and look at it only as a possibility when no other option exists. They really are intent at this particular moment about getting back together in person, about being together and they want a minister to be there on site. We'll see if that changes as we get more used to the technology and as technology gets better. I will say our ministry is becoming more diverse. Congregations say they are open to more diverse ministry. All of it is good. However, in some of our congregations, even when they say they want more diverse ministry, it's with a caveat as long as they act like the, in particular, the white male straight ministers that we've always known. We definitely see this playing out in generational differences, which are also true for our congregations. A lot of our congregations have folks who are elderly and fewer younger folks coming in. Let me talk about developmental ministry for a moment. In some ways, all congregations, with what's going on with the pandemic and the world, see themselves as developmental. We tend to look for congregations that have had a history of the same mistakes, the same problems, history of misconduct in some way, being better applicants for developmental ministry. Though on some level, it's also important to note that misconduct is not just about ministers. We've also begun looking at congregations who've had staff misconduct or congregational leader misconduct, where this has affected them. Interim ministry, still the same. Again, looking for 125. It too is becoming more diverse, particularly along age, racial, ethnic lines. The most common thing we hear in terms of what a congregation needs wants to look at during their interim ministry is around their governance structure, how to deal with generational differences, and they're also looking for hope for the future. What will be next? The biggest consequence we see that is playing out in ministerial search is geography. Our ministers are less willing to move than they ever have before. Our denominational size is such that people do generally have to move for congregations, as opposed to, say, like the Lutherans, who have as many congregations in southeastern Pennsylvania as we do in the United States and Canada. The other things ministers tell me is that they are looking for a place where their spouse can get a job, where their family can they be near family, and that affects the search. And then what some congregations often forget, it really matters what you pay a minister, and that's really affecting all searches as we go. We're also very grateful for the retired ministers who would step in congregations when there is a need for a short-term ministry. The targeted ministry program has become very important to us. You can all find all this information on our website, and we're happy to talk with you.
Hi, I'm Jan Gartner from the Office of Church Staff Finances with a few facts and figures for you. First, some perspective. Did you know that among our roughly 980 certified congregations, 2 in 3 have 140 members or fewer, including 300 at 50 members or fewer? And only 7 congregations have 800 or more members. Thanks to all who participated in last year's compensation and staffing survey. We confirmed in the survey that part-time employment is the norm. 70% of all reported employee positions were part-time, and that's likely an underestimate. But among lead and solo ministers, only 20% of positions were part-time. Based on our survey, median pay for ministers at most sizes was close to our 21-22 recommendations, although salaries for ministers in large 2 congregations fell significantly short. Interestingly, on a full-time equivalent basis, part-time positions often paid better than full-time. We'll survey again after allowing for an adjustment to our new recommendations. I wanted to name 3 compensation pain points. First, health insurance with rising premiums and often high out-of-pocket costs. Moving expenses are also increasing, and shorter ministerial tenure means that congregations need to bear these costs more often. And there are challenges with the administration of pay and benefits, like missed enrollment deadlines. Errors put congregations at risk and disadvantage their employees. Lastly, in 2022, we had 83 applicants for debt reduction grants, with average debt of over $75,000 each. Among first-time applicants, the average salary in housing was about $56,500. Thank you. I hope this was helpful. Please be in touch.
Hi, Joy Berry, Children and Family Faith Development Specialist at the LFE office at the UUA. In talking with religious education colleagues about what is the state of RE for our children and families, post-pandemic in particular, I heard many of the same challenges come up as we have known about for many years, but that they were amplified. A sense of overwhelm, a sense of loss, a sense of grieving, a quiet desperation and burnout. One DRE said, a veteran said, every DRE I speak with is three steps from quitting. The loss of DRE positions, of RE support staff, and of DRE hours and professional development funds is a great concern for religious educators, as you can imagine, because they provide those moments wherein there's covenantal connection and collegial connection that can help fill the void of some of the issues that are coming up that are so stressful in congregational life. I heard that COVID broke our ability to do stable long-term planning and that it required us to act with urgent innovation. I heard a desire for the urgency to be left behind and the innovation to remain. So a place of flexibility and creativity as we think about what's needed now. One big thing I heard over and over again was how many deficits there are with regard to our family and children's knowledge of how we do church, how we are in church together, that church is a place for connection and relationship. A lot of work's needing to be done there developmentally to get kids just back in the flow. And some high points that were noted were, for example, families are loving rituals and ceremonies that happen in whole church settings, so water communion, coming of age services, things like that. That the reliability, the trust, the accessibility of those types of community ceremonies are for humans always and religious educators and families now a place where a lot of connection and deep meaning making is happening. OWL, of course, is very popular as well. That was another high point that came up again and again. One way that religious educators named we might, you know, lose the urgency of our planning and become more humane and relational in it is, for example, rather than fret about the not having a youth group right now that's meeting, instead, how can we be intentional about building relationships between fourth through seventh graders so that the youth group of next year and beyond is stronger? I did hear that religious education professionals found that leadership, you know, boards and ministers didn't always see the challenges or the opportunities in the same way, and that there was a lot of concern that the losses of memberships and of annual pledges would continue to have a big impact on religious education's capacity to touch people's lives and to support families through these trying times. I learned that religious educators, as usual, see this as a moment of threshold, of liminal space, wherein the approaches that we have always hoped for seem to be working well. So more multigenerational experiences, more whole church learning, more events that are multigenerational as that core unique competency of churches can be lifted up because it's working better in a time with many fewer volunteers and many fewer resources for doing RE the way that we always have in the past. So those were the highlights, I guess, and the lowlights. Thanks for listening to what's going on with our children and families in religious education.
Hey, folks. I'm Reverend Dr. Megan Foley, and I'm the regional lead for the Central East region and also serving as the part-time deputy director of congregational life at the UUA under Jessica York, the director for congregational life. And I'm here today to talk about the state of the ministry with regard to our congregations. Boy, we've been through it, right? I know congregational life staff have seen ministers ride so many waves since the pandemic hit 3 years ago. We saw how you worked for so hard, so much, so long. We saw how you transformed everything about church. We saw how you led and fed your people. And we saw how you wondered when it would ever end. And then there was a phase of the complaining. They call that murmuring in the Bible, right? So you got exhausted, got some rest, and sometimes got the idea to move on. I don't have to tell you that our congregations are going through their own processes around this next phase of recovery as well. It's a really important time right now for our congregations, one where we are on the cusp of a lot of new things. Well, we might be on the cusp. Some congregations see the cusp coming and they turn and run the other way. Some congregations see the cusp and collapse in continued fatigue and trauma. Some congregations see the cusp and are energized in finding new ways to do church. And some congregations are doing all of these at the same time. No wonder you are so tired. This is an important time for you too. It's an important time for our ministry, and it's an important time for each minister. One of the more poignant things I heard from our congregational clergy during the pandemic was that the job had changed so much that they hardly recognized it, and they weren't sure that the job was now what they wanted. So it's not surprising for each of you to be asking, as our congregations move on to the next phase, whether this is still what you want to do and what's next for you. It's also been true for a long time that our congregations can have behaviors that are toxic. I find that people are not putting up with toxicity much anymore. And so things are coming to a head faster and harder than they might have before the pandemic. Luckily, our UU web of accountability is only growing. Field staff are in constant communication with each other and hopefully with you about what's going on in our congregations. Staff groups at the UUA and the UUMA are in greater collaboration than ever. Structures such as the Joint Ethics Panel, the Congregational Care Designation, and the Hope for Us Conflict Transformation Team are coming to life to help us all figure out how to be in right relationships with each other as our faith calls us to do. Ministry can be lonely, but we who work in congregational life staff at the UUA want you to know that you are never alone. Call us early and often when you're looking at a congregation and want to know the history, when you're looking for a listening ear in the early days when you're figuring each other out, if something concerning starts to happen, when trouble brews. You are accustomed to your network of ministerial colleagues, but don't forget your network of UUA staff. We are accountable to each other, bound to each other, work for and with each other for the betterment of this world that we find ourselves in. I look forward to seeing you soon.